Welcome to the LTAD Network podcast. I'm your host, Rob Anderson, and on this podcast, we seek out the world's best researchers, coaches, support staff, teachers, and athletes to better understand the process of long-term athlete development. Don't forget to get your 7-day free trial to our online platform and 50% off your first month with the code LTADVIP50. That's LTADVIP50 at the LTAD Network Hub website. This podcast episode is sponsored by Statera. Statera is a web-based application that helps youth athletes and their stakeholders estimate training load, track maturation status, monitor readiness, and manage injury. Put together by coaches working with busy youth athletes, Statera helps keep things simple and brings together the most important training information in one place to ensure that effective athlete-centered decisions can be made. No more complicated Excel tutorials and spreadsheets, just upload your athlete's data and their training schedule and start to take control of their training commitments and workload. Make more informed decisions and protect your athlete's well-being, supporting their performance. Statera takes your data very seriously. GDPR compliant and registered with the ICO, choose from a range of maturation indices and validated measures, or customize your own. Statera can record any training variable and all your data is fully exportable. To reach out today and get a free walkthrough, head over to www.statera.uk. That's STATERA.UK. Welcome to the LTAD Network podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Kelly Fillingham. Kelly is a performance coach and coach developer. She's currently employed by Scottish Hockey as the West Regional Development Manager and the head of Scottish Hockey's Girls Emerging Talent Squad, as well as leading on the Brave Academy program. She is also the director of 360 Hockey.
Welcome, Kelly. It's great to have you on the podcast this morning. Thanks for your time.
No bother, Rob. I'm excited. Looking forward to a chat.
So before we dig into the Brave Academy and the blueprint for Scottish Hockey, tell us a bit about your story, your background as a young athlete. How did you get into sport? Was it initially hockey or something else? What did that journey look like for you?
Well, as you can probably tell by the accent, I'm not a native Scot. So I hail from the beautiful county of Yorkshire. Sport's always been massive to me. Academia wasn't my path at school. I did okay and I got on okay with some stuff, but you know, I just wanted to be outside playing sport all the time. So that's kind of where it started for me. I guess I've got that traditional story of a really cool PE teacher that sort of saw a little bit of talent in different sports for me. So I was, you know, I was really lucky. I got exposed to play lots of different things at a young age. I didn't specialize too early, which I'm sure it's something we'll chat about a bit later on. But yeah, no, I played everything: cricket, hockey, football, rounders. You know, I did a bit of everything. So it was pretty cool.
And when did hockey become your kind of main focus? Was that quite late on, or?
So I'd say I got to about 15, and I had to make a choice. So I'd got signed up for a football academy with Sheffield Wednesday, that were my kind of club, my hometown club. So I got an opportunity to go and play with their ladies football academy, and I was also playing hockey for a club at this point, and everything then started to clash. I remember the coaches at the time being very specific about, you've got to make decisions. That was kind of the language. I thought about it long and hard, and at that point I was probably slightly better at football, and my granddad actually had ambitions of me going, because Italy was the place to go and play ladies football at the time, which was a while ago. You know, it was really big in Italy, and he'd got ambitions of, he was going to retire from our family business and take me around Italy playing football. So, you know, he was team football. I had a connection with hockey. I felt something a bit special when I played hockey, and I really loved the club, the local club I was at the time. So, yeah, I picked hockey. Yeah, and I've never regretted it.
What did the hockey career look like? Was that kind of more recreational? Was it university teams, representative? What did that career look like?
No, I did okay. So I got to play quite early on some national prem down in England. I got a scholarship to go out to the States to play, which was pretty cool. And so yeah, I made it all the way to sort of the age group stuff for England. At the time, the system was really different, and it's kind of the system then was everything we're trying to change now. You know, you were kind of really short, sharp trials, you're in, you're out, you know, and there was a huge north-south divide at that time. You know, and I think England hockey have done a really good job of trying to sort of bridge that. But yeah, at the time it was pretty, you know, there were only a few Northern girls in sort of, international representative squads. So yeah, it was a tough gig trying to get into that. But yeah, I did okay for a playing career. I got to play at a really high level down at home. And then unfortunately I got an ACL tear, which scuppered my playing in America. So back, played at Leeds Uni in the Bucks Prem for a while. And yeah, I'd always loved coaching. So I kind of always had that as a thought around what I wanted to do. And as the ACL happened a second time, you know, I thought this is a bit painful. I perhaps need to think of a different way to enjoy the sport. So, but I was lucky. I got some really highs in a playing career before I transitioned to coaching.
So were you kind of collecting coaching qualifications in the background while you're playing, or was that very much something you did after you stopped playing entirely?
Yeah, I mean, I did my level one pretty early on, old school level one. And I did my old school level two pretty early on, and then stopped for a little while I kind of finished up playing. But I was always conscious of being quite a student of the coaches. You know, I really watched what the coaches were doing. I've had really different coaches throughout my career, some exceptional ones, some pretty terrible ones. And I've learned from all of them. And yeah, I was really conscious of, I made loads of notes. I was a bit of a geek, bit of a hockey badger. And learned loads from them. And then I guess when I took on a kind of player coach role, and that was really tough. And then from that point on, I thought, okay, if I'm going to take this seriously, I need to rack through the a bit more sort of education around it. So yeah, then I did my level three, and then around sort of 5-6 years ago, I did the advanced coaching course. So I've always been conscious of wanting to learn. I do love CPD, and I do think it's really important. And you know, I'll do more. You know, I don't feel like I've stopped, or I've learned everything. I'll carry on, hopefully.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what did the coaching career look like? Where did the, what were some of the stops along the way that took you up to Scottish hockey?
Oh wow, yes, it's a bit of a windy journey. I started I was living in Huddersfield. So I was playing at a medium-sized club down in England, sort of six men's teams, six women's teams, you know, a junior section. And I took over the first team coach to start with, and then took over the doing the men and the women. And that was really cool, because I'd coaching a men's first team was a really good learning experience. Really different to kind of coaching a women's first team, and you learn lots of different skills. And then just loved it, just absolutely loved it. I loved being involved in the strategic side of everything and thinking differently, not just stepping on a pitch and playing my game, but actually thinking about every tiny little detail that goes into the game. So yeah, that was kind of it. The bug was there, and then I just started to kind of pick up different coaching jobs and think, okay, I can do this full time. So yeah, quit the marketing job and sort of took on a full-time coaching job and picked up some after school clubs. It was tough the first year or so. But yeah, then I landed on my feet with a job at Greenhead College in Yorkshire, and they're a state school, sort of sixth form. Our college structure is a little bit different down in England. You kind of leave school and go to a different place for college some of the time. So yeah, that was pretty cool. And their hockey program was okay, but I was there for 10 years, and we transitioned to the top three nationally, and we stayed there for 10 years. And I think that's the thing I'm probably most proud of. It was a great journey. I learned loads doing that job. So I managed to do that alongside club coaching and you know, as really having a good run and developing the club. And yeah, I did that for 10 years, sort of in Huddersfield, kind of really working hard in the hockey scene there. So yeah, it was a really good grounding experience for me.
So what brought you further north?
Well, that is a really good question. What brought me further? Challenge, you know, challenge. I was working in the talent system in England. I'd kind of switched up and had gone to a national league club to coach. So I was kind of, I'd stretched myself in lots of different ways. And then actually a master's job came up in Scotland before anything else. And I was on my ACP course and I was chatting to a mentor and he said, you know, why don't you do something different? You know, why don't you stretch yourself in a different way? So I thought, gosh, what could be more different than coaching an over 50s team in a totally different country? That would be pretty cool. So I applied for that and I guess that was the start, and met some super cool people in the Masters. The Scottish Masters is brilliant. It's full of amazing people. And I guess that was kind of my intro into Scottish hockey. And I thought, you know, it'd be pretty cool to work for a slightly smaller organization, but an ambitious one, because, you know, you can make a real impact there. Sometimes, you know, down in England, it's so big that, you know, you're at arm's length from everything, and being really impactful can be tough. So actually I thought, you know, that would be pretty cool. And the national age group job came up, so I applied for that and got it. And then yeah, one thing led to another and the full-time job came up and I was lucky enough to get that. So it feels like it's been a bit of a whirlwind the last 4 years. I was just coming for a little bit of stretch and a little bit of coaching, and I've ended up here permanently.
It's always funny how one thing kind of leads to another, and suddenly you think, how did I get here?
Yeah, I think sometimes you've just got to follow the journey. You know, it felt like I felt at home. You know, I'm very kind of proud to be from Yorkshire. I'm very, I love it there. And I thought probably the only other place I could go and live is Scotland, because it feels similar. So yeah, I think it feels, I feel at home here, and I think we've got an opportunity to do some really good work as well.
Mm. So tell us a bit about some of the things that have changed at Scottish Hockey. That was one of the reasons I was so interested to speak to someone, was around, you know, some of the Brave Academy ideas and the change in the blueprint of what you're trying to do. So give us a bit of an overview of maybe what happened before in terms of age group setups, and what prompted some ideas to go, we can look at this a bit differently, and how that kind of evolved.
So I think, you know, Scottish hockey, obviously, they're in a kind of real reset phase at the moment. Pre that, I think, you know, we were quite traditional in how we thought about things. You know, we had traditional trials and that age group trials, and that led to, you know, national selection. And, you know, I think it was just all done over a very short period of time, because, you know, you've got limited amount of volunteers. Those volunteers have got limited amount of capacity, because, you know, they're not paid staff. These are people doing things on top of their extra jobs. You know, and we just had a talent system that wasn't particularly joined up, or as joined up as it could be. And everybody working really hard, and everybody kind of doing the right things as we thought it was then, but not particularly joined up or probably working smart, I think. So I think, you know, lots of people working really hard and doing really great things, but just because we maybe didn't have the structure from a Scottish hockey point of view that joined them all up. You know, and I think what we're seeing as a nation is the challenges we face, other nations have progressively professionalized, I think is probably the best word. So, you know, where we're kind of slightly behind the curve because geographically we just have less numbers, but equally lots of other nations have taken that step to a more professional approach. You know, I was lucky enough to work in the talent stuff in England in our performance centers, you know, and we have that middle layer that kind of catches players and helps develop players. And I think that was a big part of what was potentially missing up here, that middle layer of, okay, I've not made it into a 1% of a national squad. What happens to me? Well, you go away till next year and we'll see you then. So I think that was a real thought. COVID was a great opportunity for us to pause and really think about stuff because nothing was happening. So we took that time, and you know, the Brave blueprint was developed around this is our way forward for Scottish hockey. This is what we want to be. This is what we want to create. This is how we're going to do it. And then from that came the Brave Academy, which is our new, I guess, middle layer of our pathway. So the shift from obviously traditional age groups to stage groups, I think, is probably the biggest part of all of that. And we've kind of got this mantra, right player, right opportunity, right time. And that's the thing that governs us. You know, can we give the right player the right opportunity at the right time? And we probably weren't doing that previously because we were limiting ourselves to sort of just age group. So I think by opening that up now, we're hopefully gonna tackle some of our issues that we had previously.
I think it'd probably be helpful to kind of, I guess, do a big picture on what an overview of, I guess, the blueprint as a whole, and then we can zoom into the Brave Academy. So talk us through a bit of the structure of the blueprint, and then we can focus specifically on the Brave Academy and some of that stages, as you mentioned.
Yeah, so the blueprint, the Brave Performance Blueprint was, I guess it's our principles, I suppose, to kind of sum it up relatively easily. You know, it's how we want to play as a nation. It's how we want our hockey to kind of look as a nation, what we want individual players to be able to develop. So, you know, a lot, those are countless hours of research and time, and obviously the senior coaches heavily involved and driving that, and with input from sort of everybody in the pathway. So it's been a huge piece, the blueprint, and I think we want to use it as exactly that. It's a blueprint that we then kind of scaffold everything around. So from our coach education to our to how we structure our national programs, to how we try and, you know, help coaches deliver, everything is in that blueprint. So, you know, the minute detail around how we want to transition from attack to defense is in there, but also in there is how we want to coach. You know, what we want our coaches, what skills we want our coaches to have, how we want them to prioritize at their training sessions. So it's meant as exactly that, a blueprint for everything that comes after, and everything we kind of scaffold around it.
So let's zoom into the Brave Academy then, and have a bit of a chat around that. What sort of age and stage are we talking about, you know, as an entry point and an exit point? What is that journey? You know, obviously it looks different for different individuals, as you start to highlight, but what's the kind of themes and what happens in that academy?
So I guess our ideal is we'd probably see kids from 14 upwards. You know, we traditionally, the age groups have been under 16, under 14, under 16, under 18. Like as I alluded to earlier, you know, I think early specialization, there's lots of research now that actually doesn't always help in sport, particularly team sports. You know, kids lose a lot of fundamental movement skills. One of the things we're finding at the moment is we're having to help kids move athletically, because, you know, they don't chuck footballs down, don't chuck jumpers down and play football anymore. They don't climb trees. You know, they don't just randomly do cartwheels for the love of it. So I think what we're trying to do is say, okay, look, we don't want kids too young. You know, let them go play, let them enjoy it, let them kind of diversify a little bit. And when they get to sort of under 15, you know, that's that period, we'll bring them into the Brave Academy. So we roughly work off ages of under 15 and under 17 as a very, very kind of rough guide, because, you know, clubs and schools still want to know, who should we be sending to this? You know, we're not in that place yet where everybody's across all the detail because it's brand new. So we've kind of got that as a rough thought process. But then, just to give you a flavor, we've got some 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds in the aspiring group, and we've got some 17-year-olds in the emerging group, because that's their training age. So we give like external bodies a sort of caveat of, you know, look at these ages roughly, but then when they come to us, we then kind of help stage them into where is going to be best for their development. So we're trying to work more in ability groups rather than age groups.
So That was one of the things as I was digging in and doing, you know, a little bit of research, was I like this idea of aspiring and emerging kind of groups and having, a, I guess, a slightly different path. So talk to us about, what do we mean by the aspiring group? What do we mean by the emerging group? What filters one person into one maybe over the other? And what are some of the aims?
So you've hit on the thing that I think we're probably struggling with the most, which is the terminology and people kind of getting used to what's aspiring, what's emerging. So I've started anybody in the staff now, I've started finding them if they call it under 16s and under 18s. So I'll let you off, Rob, because it's the first time we've met. But yeah. So, in terms of emerging for us, it's that your first step into a national pathway. And I think it's really, what's really important is it's young players, usually around 14 to 17 year old, who are starting to demonstrate performance potential abilities that are required of kind of international athletes, starting to. It's not consistent, you know, they're just starting to show that. And then our aspiring talent would usually be players of 15 to 19 who are consistently showing performance potential abilities. So I think that's the really key terminology, starting to show and more consistently showing. And then our kind of foundation level, which would be the players that are at districts and clubs, you know, they're young players, 12, 13, 14 in a school or club, you know, and they're beginning to show a little bit of promise as hockey players. So that's the level before they come to us. And then we take them into emerging, which is obviously that starting to show, and then aspiring, where it's more consistent. So you could have a 17-year-old who's showing, but not consistent, but we actually think, you know what, they just need some development, and they're going to smash, you know, under 21s, or, you know, they're going to be great in a few years time. They just need something a bit different. Or you could have a 15-year-old who is constantly showing, and we push them into the aspiring program. So I think it's trying to catch the right stage for the person, rather than, okay, well, you've aged out now and you've not shown this, so off you go, we're not interested anymore.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big criticisms, I guess, of and I, you know, it's not specific to hockey or rugby or football, but that kind of format of, well, you haven't reached where you need to in our time frame, so unfortunately your journey's ended. And it's like, well, actually another 12 months they might have got there, but we have this deadline of you need to reach it by the age of 18 or you don't progress. And as we know, working with youth athletes, everyone's journey is a little bit different in terms of when the penny drops or when physically they're mature or when they're suddenly ready to commit to that level. But that necessarily, we don't have necessarily the flexibility in our pathway to accommodate people with a variety of different things like that going on. So I think it's great to have a bit more flex in a system that does, you know, what you're doing, which is brilliant. So what within the academy setup, so we've got these kind of, I guess, two different sort of groups of individuals, those who are demonstrating it more consistently, those who are maybe starting to show a bit of promise. What's the kind of delivery of support to them? Is it just technical coaching? Is it nutrition, strength and conditioning, physiotherapy? What does that look like?
So obviously we're in our first cycle of Brave Academy. So we've got kind of, if we talk about that middle layer of Brave Academy, we are very much focused on technical coaching. We recognize that kind of schools and clubs, you know, they're prepping for their games on a Saturday, you know, so it's not, they don't always have the time or resources to kind of go into more technical skills with players. So what we're finding is, what we were finding as national coaches, is we've got lots of players coming to us, and some of their technical skills not primarily where it maybe should be for the kind of stage that we've put them into. So we focus a lot on technical stuff. We've got different focus areas that we work on that we've identified as coaches that we feel players need a little bit more support in. And then we have a Brave education plan that goes alongside that. So we just delivered this week, actually, it was brilliant, a performance behaviors workshop with some of the Scotland senior women. So they were fantastic. They came on and talked to the players about, you know, their journey. You know, they were really open and honest. I was really impressed with, you know, how good they were and how they delivered. So they talked a lot about that. They talked a lot about choices versus sacrifice, and how to help frame that a little bit. So they were fantastic. We've had a mindfulness and how you look after yourself in sport workshop for them. And then we've got some nutrition stuff coming up. We've got a little bit around hydration and sleep and how important those things are. And then we've got just a physical maintenance program coming up as well. So we've kind of put together a what we feel players need a little bit of support from away from the pitch. So a big part of the Brave Academy is that as a package, as much as it is, you know, on the pitch, because, you know, athletes, young players, they need a little bit of support around what good looks like for all of those things. And parents too, you know, we're really conscious of opening up our education stuff so that parents, we video it and send it out so the parents can watch it as well. So, you know, I think that's one of the things I'm really proud of that we're doing as well, offering that additional support. And then our national players get, you know, even more of that, which is, you know, just topped up on terms of what the Brave Academy is getting. So, yeah, it's definitely a big part of what we're trying to do.
Mm. So I'm right in thinking that this is kind of organized regionally as well, isn't it? There's multiple regions. It's not just one central hub. So there's players attending different venues across the country.
Yeah. So we've got the Dundee Devils. They're obviously based in Dundee. We've got the Edinburgh Lightning and the Glasgow Thunder. Our hope is, you know, maybe we're gonna sort of be able to expand that in a few years' time, you know, and have something based in the borders and something based a little further up north. So, you know, that would be our hope. But we've got to kind of jump the numbers up of kids playing hockey before we sort of think about that, because we want to try and make it accessible. That's the other part of all of this. You know, hockey is a more accessible sport for everybody, you know, and coming away from sort of just having one demographic in the sport and actually opening it up to as many as we can. So to do that, we need to make sure geography is not a barrier. So that's in our plan, our kind of 5-year plan, definitely.
Mm. No, I think it's great, because I think often, you know, when people are, you'll have sat through these kind of workshops as well, I'm sure, in terms of long-term athlete development models and different things. And very often people are tempted to just copy and paste and say, oh, this is what they do in Sweden, so we'll do that. And it's like, well, they've got different demographics, different geography, different player numbers. You can't just copy and paste things. You kind of have to maybe look at the principles and go, okay, what does that look like in our area with the players we have? You know, we could take some things, but not everything. Some things we'll have to, you know, kind of see how they get on. So I think it's great that, you know, as you pointed out, it's expanding beyond the national teams, expanding beyond, you know, central hub, etc. So how does it compare in terms of player numbers that you would have now across those three venues versus your traditional age grade setup, where maybe it's a squad that just gets focused on? What's the difference in terms of participation numbers?
Gosh, it's huge. So I guess if you think about traditionally how we do it, there'd be an inter-district competition, and then a national squad would be chosen. That national squad would probably run at 23-24, and then that would be it from Easter onwards. You know, what we're doing now is we've got, you know, our capacity is to have 30 kids per stage per gender in each place. So we've got, you know, four groups in Edinburgh, let's say. We've got the aspiring and emerging boys and girls. So we would look to have 30 in each of those groups. So you've got your national squad, but you've also got, you know, all that group still in the Brave Academy, still working towards opportunities for later on in the summer. So we've just selected from the Brave Academy a squad to play the UK Lions in the summer, and a squad to go to school games in September. So traditionally, the school games squad would be our national kind of under 18s squad. But actually what we're saying is, you know, what we really want to do is give sub-international level opportunity to our Brave Academy. So they have a reason to train all year, because, you know, we train to play. You know, kids don't train to just train. They train to play. They want to play. So doing that best v best through the Brave Academy and actually giving them a point of focus and saying, look, yeah, you've not got selected for the national stuff, but actually stay in the Brave Academy, keep working, and there's this sub-international opportunity in the summer. You know, and I think that's I'm really proud of us doing that, because we're keeping, what are the numbers? So gosh, my maths is not great, Rob, but we've got 30 kids in each stage and in each place, you know, in three areas, you know, so the numbers speak for themselves. You know, we've kept far more kids in the system than we would doing it the traditional way.
Yeah, I think that's one of the keys, isn't it? Because that's one of the things when you work in talent development, you kind of realize, okay, we're picking these kids at maybe 14, and they're the ones that are then getting this extra input and these extra competitive opportunities. So the chance of next year someone being able to break through without that becomes diminished, and it kind of compounds, doesn't it? So you end up with almost the same kind of kids coming through the system, but we're losing potential talent because they just didn't show up on that first trial day, or maybe, they couldn't make the second one or whatever, and you end up actually reducing your talent pool instead of keeping it as wide as possible. And that's what
Absolutely.
kills, I think, is specifically in an area like Scotland where you have limited player numbers, you just can't afford to do that.
No, we can't, and I think that we don't think about relative age effect. We don't think about training age. We don't do a little Google poll that asks the kid, did you have a good sleep the night before train the selection, or did you, something happen with your family? We don't know any of those things, but we expect them to rock up and turn up and play. And they've got selectors sat around, giving a little tick or not. And it's, yeah, I think keeping players in this, and we use sort of a RAG rating through the year so that players know, okay, I'm green, I'm in a good place. Okay, I'm amber, I've got to work on these things. Okay, I'm in a red zone, I've dropped a little bit and I need a little bit of support on this. And scaffolding that for a whole year, is the only way we as a smaller nation are gonna kind of reach our target of world class in sort of our 10 years time. We want to be in the world's top 10. That only happens if we have a really robust, flexible talent system.
That just reminded me of your previous role. Something maybe 10 years, that's about the right time frame for you to go top three.
Yeah, no, 10 years, and then I get a bit twitchy. So yeah, that's definitely, I think we'll see. It's good. It's important we keep reminding ourselves, and I'm terrible because I like want it tomorrow. I want it done. So I think we have to remind ourselves this is a long-term approach to doing talent ID differently, and hopefully keeping people in the sport. This is not just about our top 1%. This is about the domestic game in Scotland getting better, and us improving youngsters so that when they're in our domestic game, it lifts the standard of the domestic game. So this is about all those things. It's important. It's not just about our top 1%.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. As a mentor of mine, Kelvin Giles, I mean, he was speaking more about the physical domain, but it's true of the, technical as well. He said, the road to wellness and elite performance begins with development. And he was talking about physically, having the skills to be able to run, jump, throw. But the same is true of technical. If you only have 30 players at the development level, well, you're really struggling for your elite players now. But if you can keep that development level as wide and as open as accessible as possible, then you're providing as many opportunities for those elite players to develop and grow and turn, I guess, that next level more competitive. So it makes perfect sense what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a mentor of mine is, I'm lucky enough to work in, I have a coaching company down in England, and I work with a lady called Amanda Partington, who's an ex-Wales boss, and her background is talent ID. She's just finished her PhD in that, and she talks so much sense about a kid who's a fast dribbler. In 5 years' time, the defenders are going to get as fast as they are. They're going to get as physical as they are. What does that kid do if that kid's never been stretched? If they've just, oh well, that player's good at that, so that's their superpower, so we'll just kind of leave them with that because that's good enough for now because they get past everybody. But actually, we've got to have a development that even a development phase that even when you're great at something and the best in your group, we stretch you, we develop you, we find a way to stretch you out of your comfort zone. And that then, when somebody catches up to you physically or speed wise or whatever else, you've still stretched, so you've got additional skills. I think we don't do that enough. We just see the superpower of that young person and think that's kind of enough, and we don't then still stretch them. So I'm lucky enough to be around her, and she speaks lots of sense. So a lot of kind of my thought process and philosophies have come from spending so much time and being mentored by her. So that's been a good place for me to be, and then hopefully help in Scotland and bring some of that in.
Yeah, it really comes back to the initially what you said about right player, right opportunity, right time, doesn't it? Like
Yeah.
you see that in a lot in, some talent setups where a player comes through and under 14s, 15s, they're amazing and they kill it, kill it, kill it, kill it. And then suddenly they go to the next level and they just suddenly drown and disappear and that's the end because, whatever that talent was they relied on, as you said, hasn't been stretched. And whether it's bio banding or it's the opportunity to go and play men's or whatever, it's about, as you said, providing that right opportunity. And it's not right for the whole team, but it might be right for that one individual at this point in time and right for someone else in 6 months' time. But absolutely. As you say, if we let them kind of tick over in their comfort zone, then they're never going to push on to that next level.
No, and the speed bumps part of that's really important. It's something we talk to our Brave Academy coaches around. How do we stretch at the right time for players? And how do we give speed bumps to players at the right time? It was really great listening to the three senior players that came into the Brave call the other night, because they all talked about their path wasn't linear, you know, and we talk about it all the time and we say it, but actually I think it means more to the kids when they hear it from players that have gone through it. You know, you have to experience those tough moments where you have to dig in sport to become an elite performer. You know, I genuinely believe that. And I think we have a responsibility in talent ID, particularly when working in kind of talent, more elite talent ID. I think you have a responsibility to give these players little setbacks that they can then develop the emotional and skills to overcome and cope with. And it's got to be managed and scaffolded at the right time. But, you know, Brave gives us a place to do that because it's a landing ground. If you've not quite made national, but you were killing it at school and club, like you said, okay, well, this is your speed bump now, but you're in Brave. You're in a place where we can help you and we can, you know, give you some stretch and give you, you know, X, Y, and Z. But we've not just lost you out of the system. So, you know, it's been good for that. There are players that would have hoped to have made, you know, performance squads that haven't, and they've landed back in Brave and they've worked hard, you know, and they've now made the school game squad, for example. So, you know, I think that's an important part of the Brave Academy as well.
Yeah, I think that's critical, isn't it? That people often, that kind of classic model of, you know, one shot it's really flawed. Not just for being able to pick your best squad in the long term, but being able to give those opportunities to players for a second time around to say, okay, you know, actually, here's the feedback the coach had for you. Here's a plan. We're going to go away and work on that. Because very often players come away from not being selected and they're not really clear on why they weren't selected and not really clear on how to overcome that problem for next time. So what's going to happen next time? Same thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if I was a gambling woman, which I'm not, because as you know, coaches don't get paid enough money to do that. So, if I was a gambling woman, I would 100% say there will be somebody, some players from the Brave Academy that are in there right now that haven't made the national squad, boys and girls, that will play senior international. Mm-hmm. Because they will just develop at a slight, they might really kick on next year and be the stars of the show, you know, but that's how talent development works. You know, people develop at different rates and different stages. And, you know, I'm excited we've got a place now where hopefully we can help that rather than hinder it. Mm-hmm.
So you've mentioned a couple of things already in terms of obviously relative age effect and maturation. Is that something that you're taking into account at the moment within the Brave Academy or looking kind of in the background, or is that something for the future?
No, I would say it's on show at the moment within our two national squads. So we also call our national squads emerging and aspiring. And we have an age profile of 14 to 17 in our emerging squad, which is what I'm the head coach of. So that's players that are starting to demonstrate performance potential required at international level. And then we have an age profile of 15 to 18 in our aspiring squad. So we're already doing that. And I think we're already really conscious that, you know, we've got some players that through injury or other things, or, you know, they've not developed at the same rate as we potentially, the trajectory we had them on. So rather than, you know, kicking them out of the system, we've put them in the emerging squad. And actually we've put some players in there that, you know, they felt frustrated at the beginning because they thought, well, I should be in the aspiring squad. But once you have that open conversation with them and say, look, this is for your stage where you need to be right now. If you go into the aspiring squad, you're going to struggle a little bit and potentially, you know, not kind of last in there. So it can be because their power's not quite where it needs to be, or physically they're not quite where they need to be, or technically, but we see something, we see potential. So I think our age profile of both those squads at the moment is because we're working on kind of stage rather than age. I'm not going to lie, Rob, it's a tough transition from where we are to what we're trying to do. And still loads of conversation we need to have, particularly with the wider community and stakeholders. You know, we understand it. And I think we went into it trying to explain it from a place of our understanding and a year and a half's research about it. And we just expected everyone to get it. So actually we need to re-engage with that piece and really kind of put forward our, you know, our research into it and our reasons and you know, what we hope we're going to achieve with it. So that's the wider piece, I think, that's left in terms of where we are with Brave Academy for sure.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes that's the toughest part, isn't it? Like people are so used to a traditional system of, well, we do under 14s, under 16s, under 18s. Why have we changed it? It's always worked. And it's like, well, actually, we think we're missing out on a lot of players. And clearly the rationale that you have for changing things is very clear, but it's being able to communicate that and kind of steer people away from, okay, just because we've done it that way doesn't mean it's the optimal way. And maybe there's some better ways of doing things. That's sometimes half the battle.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's being engaged in the research is really important. In 10 years time, there'll be, you know, an extra way, you know, there'll be even better ifs, won't there? There always will, because the more research we gather on things, the more we're able to inform our decisions. And I think that's what we want, to just move to a more kind of research-based, you know, approach, you know, and what's right for Scotland and what's right for other countries, as you rightly said, is not right for us. We have to do what we need to do well and not necessarily copy anyone else. So I think that's what the Brave Blueprint's given us. It's given us an identity, a DNA. And, you know, everything we now do is scaffolded off that. And we'll adapt, we'll change. The Brave Academy will keep tweaking till we're at a point where we feel like we've got the best version. But yeah, we've definitely got to go out and try and take more people with us on the journey, for sure.
I think it's really interesting that we're starting to see more and more alternative, whether it's academy arrangements or national team. You know, there's lots of other, I guess, case studies that we can use as evidence and say, well, look, you know, they're using the Futures program in Belgium, and that's worked really well for their national team. They're looking at biobanding tournaments in the Premier League, or, you know, look at Iceland outperforming their national team because they've done their football development differently. Like, there is the opportunity to do something differently. And there's case studies of people who veered away from the set mindset to do something that was appropriate for their region and their demographic, and it's worked well for them. We can do the same. It just looks like this for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is. It's quite different, isn't it? So it's just, I think you're right, explaining more and you know, we're going to host a series of webinars kind of from September onwards, just to talk more to people about Brave. We're going to have coach development that's based around our Brave blueprint. So, you know, year one was always going to be a tough sell because we just threw all this new language at people and said, okay, guys, this is what we're doing. And everyone was like, whoa, hang on, what do you mean it's not 14s, 16s and 18s? So I think, you know, there's a little bit of just going back over that and you know, engaging more with the stakeholders, the schools, the clubs, you know, the people who are impacted at that talent foundation level with this. So, you know, I think there's a really positive year ahead. We've got so much information from year cycle one that, you know, we're already gonna tweak and make some adjustments to make things better for cycle two. So yeah, I think we're in a really good place with it. And as you say, it's just what works for Scotland. Well, keeping more kids in the sport for longer, you know, that's what works for us. We can't afford to lose players because, you know, we want to grow the game and we want to improve. And our big ambition is obviously world's top 10 and having a, you know, a world-class domestic system. So that needs world-class players to come into it. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So you've mentioned a couple of things already, maybe, you know, a bit more emphasis or you know, more opportunities in the coach edge and the community education. Is there anything else coming up for you or for the Brave project in the next 12 to 18 months? Anything coming down the pipe?
Yeah, I mean, we're crazy busy right now with our national stuff. So we've got Ireland this weekend coming up, and then we're off to an Eight Nations tournament next week. So that's going to be fantastic for our young players in the national squads, a real different experience for them to what they're used to. And then our Brave squads play the UK Lions and the go to school games at the back end of the summer, so of August, September. So that's exciting. We've got some open sessions. This is kind of a new thing we've brought in this year. So we have our district activity that prompts kind of our take into the Brave Academy. But what we wanted to do is make sure there was an open opportunity for kids not been put forward for district activity, or that maybe a district's not been able to get a team for a certain thing. So we've put these open sessions on where any club or school can nominate players they feel need to be seen for Brave. So we've got a couple of those sessions coming up at the back end of August, which is exciting. We've got a big coaches meeting coming up to kind of hash out, you know, what coach education is going to look like for Brave, and, you know, what we're going to sort of offer into schools and clubs. So I think cycle two is going to be really, really exciting in terms of that outward engagement. So we've focused very much on the players and getting the players in and getting that part of the journey right. I think cycle two is going to be very much around, okay, this is what we've learned from cycle one, and we want to kind of go out and share it with everybody. So yeah, I think the winning of hearts and minds is the plan for cycle two in terms of that wider engagement piece. Yeah.
Well, sounds fantastic. Where can people find out more or follow what's going on with the Brave project?
So you can check out our social media stuff. We're pretty good. I'm a prolific tweeter, but that's about it. I'm not very good on the old TikTok or Snapchat or anything. I'm a bit old for all of that now. So yeah, I tweet quite a lot about the Brave stuff and Scottish hockey. Obviously it's across their social platforms. And then, you know, the website's always a good place to go and check out. That's being updated at the moment. So we're going to have a Brave Academy part of the website come September. So, but yeah, I would just say keep an eye on the social media stuff. Usually if we're going to be doing anything or we've got a workshop coming up, it'll be all publicized on there.
Fantastic. And I'll stick some links to those in the show notes so people can check those out. Thanks so much for your time today. It's great to hear, you know, alternative perspectives and people who are willing to step out of the box with talent ID and talent development. So it's been great to get an insight, and well done for having the courage to do that.
Yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully, you know, in a couple of years we can have another chat, and I can tell you it's starting to be successful. So yeah, no, it's been good. I'm really happy to kind of talk about this with anyone. So if anybody does want to get in touch, more than happy to chat. I could geek out about this stuff all day.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time today. I hope hope that's been beneficial for the listeners. I'm sure that's maybe prodded a few minds to think a little bit differently about maybe their age group setup or their talent development. So thanks for your time and for giving us your insight.
No problem, Rob. Happy to.
Thanks for listening to this episode. And don't forget to get your 7-day free trial to our online platform, as well as 50% off your first month with the code LTADVIP50. Don't forget, you can find us on Instagram using the account at LTAD Network, as well as Twitter at LTAD Network, and find our website www.ltadnetwork.com.